So that was an interesting time. So yeah, I saw you several times with the Stranglers back in the day. Happy days. So let's ask you some questions, because I know we've got about 20 minutes. Is that right?
Yeah.
Great stuff. So what were your early musical influences?
Well, I grew up in the 60s when, you know, rock music was just starting in this country and taking off. And so I was a big Cliff Richard fan because he was a rocker at the beginning when the band were called Drifters. And a lot of rock and roll, his first singles were great rock songs. And then he softened up with Living Doll onwards. And then there was stuff coming over from America, Eddie Cochran, all this stuff. And I was at school with Richard Thompson from Fairport.
Yeah.
And he taught me to play bass, actually, and we were in a band together. And we used to find stuff. So he'd be playing me Howlin' Wolf. And then I'd find the Who. And we'd play each other stuff, you know, and it was just a voyage of just discovery, and it was a very rich mine of stuff, you know, to grow up in that period.
Yeah, absolutely. The early days of rock music. So who influenced your songwriting, would you say?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that what happens is that whatever influenced you right at the beginning, you end up with your whole life. So, I mean, I'm always trying to write songs in the classic traditions. That's why I don't have much time for the dance movement at all, because that kind of songwriting, that people play me, I'll listen to this new song, and I listen to this, and I go, well, it's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
There's no dynamics, because it's not in that classical method where you have a verse and a chorus and then it goes somewhere else, you know, and we used to call it a middle eight. And then it goes back to the core, you know, and all those dynamics of songwriting, it's got lost in the house music scenario.
Okay.
So, you know, and I'm just trying to continue that tradition. I don't want it to die, you know. Am I trying to speak this language that if I don't keep it going, I'm scared that no one will continue speaking it, you know, and it will die away. So, it's a dying breed, you know, dying art, writing good songs.
So which songwriters would you like to be compared to?
Well, I mean, Lou Reed was a fabulous writer. Robbie Krieger in The Doors was a fabulous writer. You know, he was responsible for a lot more writing than Jim Morrison was. You know, these are great writers. And, I mean, Pete Townsend's a great rock writer, you know, and... There are many people. I mean, Dylan's got some great stuff, you know. So there's a lot of people out there that can do it, but I don't know, younger people that are doing it, you know. I don't know. I mean, I despair sometimes. I was walking along the road the other day and I heard some busker around the corner. I thought it was some girl with a guitar, and I walked around the corner and it was a guy.
Oh, okay, interesting.
But his voice was so high and so feminine, you know, and I thought, well, what's going on? You know, I thought this was a woman singing. Why are young men singers sounding like women?
Yeah, it's like singing a falsetto style. Go straight into falsetto. I do know what you mean.
It doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense to me. People go, oh, well, you're just being a stick in the mud old school. Well, no, I like a nice baritone male voice.
Yeah.
You know,
actually,
that's what men do.
Can I just say, I was listening to Elysian Fields earlier, and 24/7 really reminded me of Lou Reed in your vocal style, actually. It's interesting you said that.
Funny you should mention Elysian Fields, because we've just remastered it.
Okay.
Because it never came out on vinyl. So we're releasing it on vinyl, the remastered version. It sounds fantastic.
Okay,
and
cool.
So on the tour, I'm going to be featuring pulled a couple of tracks off it, Thousand Kisses and Heaven and... Under Her Spell, and we're going to do that. We're doing those live. It sounds great.
Okay, fantastic. I look forward to it. I'll be at the Harpenden gig,
great.
Obviously, so I'm looking forward to that. So the other thing, we talked about the songwriting. What about your vocal and guitar influences? I mean, you mentioned Lou Reed, and I can see Lou Reed in there, but who else would you say?
Well, a lot of people say, I don't try to sound like Lou Reed, but people say I do sound like him. But
a little.
I mean, I think Jim Morrison had the most fabulous baritone voice. You know, it was almost like operatic. rock voice, you know, fabulous voice. I mean, so I aspire to that as well. I mean, Dylan in his way has got an interesting, not these days, it's a bit croaky, but in the day, he had a very, you know, when he first went electric, that there's something about that voice that was quite hypnotic, you know. It's I like vocalists who sound distinctively different.
Yeah.
Like, where you listen to it and you go, oh, I know who that is.
Yeah.
And people tell me that I've got one of those voices.
Oh, you do. You do.
Well, I'm very happy to hear that, although they hear all these other people in my voice. And that's what upsets me about when the modern day vocalist, there's no style at all.
Yeah.
They all sound the same to me. Women, men, the lot.
Yeah.
All the girl singers, Beyonce, they all sound the same. You know, Dido, all the huge sellers. They play and say, do you like this? I go, I can't tell who it is. The voice just sounds like a million other voices. There's no style anymore, no character. And it's not just in men, but in women singers. And you can quote me on this, and people will shoot me down in flames. But I'm sorry, Adele, you know, sells millions of records. Sounds, what's the big deal about the voice? It just sounds like everybody else.
Yeah, I know what you mean. There's a movement towards perfection in vocals these days. As opposed to character
in
many ways.
Perfection, you know, the most beautiful thing has imperfections, you know. If you have something that's perfect, it's boring.
I couldn't agree more.
You know, the most beautiful woman is boring because there's no flaws there. You've got to have a flaw to go, that was what makes it unique.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I'm a huge fan of Neil Young, and it's the imperfections of the songs and the way he records them and his approach to them, and certainly his vocal that gives character and gives meaning.
Who's this?
Neil Young.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go. He's one of the greats, you know.
He is. Going back to The Doors, I mean, the Stranglers were often compared in sound, with the keyboards in particular,
The
Doors.
Well, we had keyboards, that's why.
But some of the songs did, you know, if I think about Hanging Around, made me think of The Doors quite a lot,
right?
That first album.
That's the first time I've ever heard that.
Okay.
No, honestly.
Really?
I mean, other things, like Walk On By, people think Light My Fire, so I can see that.
A little, yeah.
But Hanging Around and The Doors, really, that's interesting.
It's the guitar break. It's your guitar break in particular that makes me think of The Doors.
Well, I mean, I'm a big fan of Robbie Krieger.
Yeah, I guess that now, yeah. Your sound.
I'm a huge fan. I think he was so clever because there was only... It's just like my position in The Stranglers and actually now. I'm the only guitarist. There's the only one. So you've got to be very clever how you fill out the sound with just one guitar. Because there's a lot of bands when they've got two guitars, it's easy. One guy does the rhythm and fills it up.
Yeah.
And then one guy does the fiddly bits, you know, with the high bits.
Okay, that brings me on to my next question, which was, who are your guitar influences? Obviously, Robbie Krieger we've got.
I'm explaining it.
Yeah.
But when you've got just one guitar in the lineup, it makes you got to be much cleverer to be effective with just one guitar. And I use my distortion pedal. If I'm doing single note stuff, even when normally there'd be a chord sequence, sometimes I put a single note run in because if you put it on distortion, it fills up the sound, but it's creating a difference in sound. You know what I mean?
I do.
And Chris, if you look to the guitar playing on The Doors, it's genius because, the guy, Krieger, he was a master at changing the texture with how and what he played on his guitar. I mean, he's still alive. I've never met him. I'd love to meet him.
Oh, yeah. I'm a huge Doors fan too, so I definitely...
Yeah.
Part of your language. I do believe that Manzarek was probably the greatest keyboard player, certainly Hammond player in rock for me. Krieger, great guitarist. They were almost a perfect band, and...
Yeah.
Jim Morrison was a great singer, great front man. I would love to have seen The Doors. I think if you was to say you could go back and catch one band,
it
may be The Doors for me. I really think it's close. But yeah, that's a good one. So, which brings me on slightly on that. How does the songwriting differ, do you think, as a process, now, as a solo artist, than, say, when you're in The Stranglers, when you're with a band? How would?
Well, I mean, at the beginning, John and I used to write a lot of songs together. And then as it went on, we got we got to know how to write songs a bit better, so we started writing separately. And then toward the end, I was completely writing separately, and so I was getting used to writing by myself before I'd even left the Stranglers. And but then when I did leave, I was on a process of re-education about songwriting, and it's interesting. What I find is that you still need an objective look at things. So, but you can get that from yourself if you don't listen to something for a while. It's like playing it to someone new, which is what you do if you're writing with someone. So, I start a song and then I put it down and I don't listen to it, and then I go back to it a couple of weeks later and I know what's wrong with it. I did that, it should have gone there, And so that's how you do it if you're writing alone.
Okay, interesting. So, which brings me on, in The Stranglers, who sung the songs? Was it the person that wrote the song that sung it, or did you think about who would be the best one for each song?
Hard to say. Whoever wrote the lyric normally would sing the song. And sometimes, but arrangement and stuff was, it's all in, there's a book that I wrote called Song by Song, Stranglers Song by Song.
Okay.
And I go through the whole catalogue of songs, saying how the song came about and who provided what. And it's all in there, it's all in there. Generally speaking, if someone sang a song, they came up with a lyric. They may or may not have come up with the whole song, or they may have had help, or they might not have written it at all, but be singing it. So lots of different possibilities,
So just to finish on this kind of one, which of the Stranglers songs are your favourites and why?
It changes whenever we play them, it's hard to say. I don't really have one. I mean,
okay.
Financially speaking, I would be. I've got to take my hat off to Golden Brown, because without the royalties from Golden Brown, a lot of my activities would be curtailed. Okay. It's such a successful song.
Duchess was quite a big song too.
I'm glad about that.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, that song was one of the easiest to write. Took about 10 minutes.
Well, the outfit's off the
way. Amazing.
Which are your solo songs, would you say,
Well, there again, I mean, it changed. When I get a new album, when I finish the new album, the latest thing I've done is my favourite. but I'm very fond of Cadiz, on Beyond Elysian Fields. So Cadiz, I thought, was a real landmark for me with writing songs. I think that's almost a perfect song.
Okay. I mean, on the Monster album, you've got 10 kind of acoustic versions of Stranglers songs. Why did you do that, and how did you choose which ones to do? What was the motivation there?
Well, Sony, I was back on Sony again, a big label, and you listen to it. If they've got ideas, you listen to them. And they said, look, we love the new album, it's great, but let's put something in there, in the package, which will attract Stranglers fans. Is there something we could do? Something you'd be happy to do, and something you'd be happy to do. And I said, well, I've never done an acoustic album in the studio. I've never done one, acoustic, just me with an acoustic guitar. And I've been doing solo gigs for years, acoustic, just me and my guitar. And so I've been through the Stranglers catalogue acoustically. And I thought, well, I know some songs that work really well acoustically, that surprises, surprising choices, and they're not always the big hits. So I could do that, and then I thought about making it sound really dark, sort of like Johnny Cashy, and I found a way of making the guitar sound really big but really dark, and the voice, we got the voice sounding right too. And I'm very happy with the way it turned out. And it's a surprising choice, There's a few hits in there, but who would ever have thought of Outside Tokyo would come out well as an acoustic track? But it works fantastically well.
Okay, interesting. So how
and of course on one of them, Ships Are Passing the Night, I've got, in fact there's a couple of tracks, Ian Anderson from Jethro Tull is playing flute on them.
Oh, okay, interesting.
He's on the, people aren't aware of this, but it's on the credits.
Okay. Okay, thanks. So how do you think your singing and songwriting and even guitar playing has changed over the years?
If well, it hopefully it's got better. it's easier. I tell you, it's easier. So that might be reflected in how they're being accepted, because it's just getting easier. I find it very easy to write songs because I don't try all the time. Mm. The trick with songwriting is, like, I was speaking to an artist once, a painter, and he said the trick with painting is that you don't try and do it every day. Don't try the work Protestant ethic, you know, trying to do it every day. Just do it when it feels right. And some days you don't feel right, so you don't do it that day. And the same with songwriting, you know, and what's happening is that I end up going through an intense period of songwriting. When I say intense, it's like it will last months, but not every day, but it's there, done. And I'm coming up to one of those periods now. And then once you've written the song, then you've got to record them in the way that so they work, that you're happy with, and then you've got to go out and tour them. So there's all that period when you're not in a writing mode. But I'm coming up to a writing mode, I can feel it, and as soon as this tour finishes, I'm going into the studio to work out some of these ideas and see what happens.
Interesting. So obviously I was going to ask about your plans for the future, but it sounds as though songwriting and recording another album is
I've got the album title and I got the cover as well. Okay. I know exactly what I want.
Interesting. So we're running out of time, I see. So one question, this is an obvious question to ask, and forgive me for asking it, but do you think you'll ever have a reunion with the other members of the Stranglers?
Well, it can't really happen because, I mean, Jeff Black still hasn't played. In fact, his doctors told him not to play drums anymore for his health. So you can't really... How can you have a reunion if one of the members is alive but can't play? It would only make sense, wouldn't it, if it was the four original members. You can't really have a reunion if it's not... Otherwise, it's not a reunion, is it?
Well, I agree with you, you're right.
I guess the Stranglers could get back together with the singer that replaced me, and that would be a reunion, wouldn't it?
I suppose they've got someone else at the moment. I know what you mean.
There's a lot of complexities, which means it's not really possible.
Yeah.
Even if it, you know, why even consider it? Because it's not possible. You know.
Okay.
I mean, Paul Weller's always avoided getting back together with the other members of Jam. I respect him for that. He wants his own identity. And in the same way, I even though they're still going, I mean, from the Jam are going, you know, and they're getting bigger and bigger audiences, so because they play the Jam stuff. So, I mean, the Stranglers are getting bigger audiences because they play the Stranglers stuff. Paul wants to play his own stuff, and he does occasional Jam stuff, I know. And same like me. So I see a lot of parallels there, you know, that's what happens. You know, people, if you want to be true to yourself, you've got to do what you feel is right.
Absolutely. Which brings me on to a more general question, but tribute bands. You talked about that a little bit there, touched on tribute band. I mean, there's one to the Stranglers called Straighten Out, I believe. I've not seen them. I've been told they're good.
I mean,
what do you think about that?
The Stones have become their own tribute band, haven't they? In a big scale. Fleetwood Mac just went out on the road without Lindsey Buckingham, but with Neil Finn pretending to be Lindsey Buckingham. Well, Fleetwood Mac have become a tribute band to themselves. I mean, this is all big corporate business. You know, there's a lot of money involved. Do you think that if Keith Richards suddenly, you know, God forbid something happened to him and he couldn't play this tour, do you think Stones are going to stop? Of course not. They'll get someone in who plays just like Keith, and people will flock to go and see him to see what he's like. Look at Queen. Queen's selling out without, you know, lead singer. Look at the Stranglers packing out gigs without the lead singer, guitarist, and without the original drummer, just two sidemen on stage. You know, I mean, what? This is the modern world, you know.
That's big business. Well, I was thinking more generally about tribute bands and the whole...
Sorry?
I was thinking more generally about the whole situation with tribute bands, which have become, with no original members, purely.
Bands are becoming their own tribute bands.
Yeah, okay.
You know, like I am, in a way.
Mm.
You know, I'm a tribute band to the Strangers catalogue.
Mm.
And you get Clem Burke going on tour with the top Blondie tribute band playing drums. How can you separate the two? It's all the same now. You can't say a tribute band includes the originals.
I know. I think I remember some years ago. I think it was Judas Priest when Rob Halford left. They went to one of the tribute bands and they auditioned the singers from tribute bands, and one of them got the gig. So he actually went from a tribute band to the actual band.
The lead
very
singer
weird.
Of Stranglers is from a tribute Stranglers band. Did you know that?
I didn't know that. No. Okay.
Yeah, Baz Warner used to be in a Stranglers band.
Oh. Okay. Well, yeah, that's another example then. It's interesting how these things are now.
If you look carefully, you'll see the truth in my words, but there's no separation now between the original band and a tribute band. And the ones that are not new bands, you know. It's all the same thing.
Is that an issue for rock music now, do you think, the way that that's gone?
Well, I don't know. It's like, before the records were invented, composers used to write music, and then they'd either go out with an orchestra and play it, or another orchestra with another leader would go out and play the music of that composer. And it's becoming a bit like that, isn't it?
Okay, so it's kind of come right round, like the 60s, when everybody covered each other's music to some extent, and it was, you'd have seven versions of one song. It's interesting.
Well, we're not getting that. I don't think that's going to happen. But, I see what you mean. Yeah. You sort of do get that. Yeah, I guess so. Where will it all end, eh?
Well, as long as rock music keeps going.